Okay, well, this is the place where I say the same thing just about every week. So let's get on with it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. And it is the very first word in this case in Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26. So that's where we're going to turn. And it is literally the word re'eh, which means see, or behold. That's how the Old English renders it. Or check it out, I guess, in the modern English. Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. Now, the you is the southern form there, the plural y'all. So it's, behold, I set before you all this day a blessing and a curse. And what interests me about this, I know I point this out every year, but I think it really does bear repeating, is, well, actually several things. One, this idea of a blessing and a curse is a repeated theme that we're going to see throughout Deuteronomy, especially, of course, in the, literally, the blessings and the curses in Deuteronomy chapter 28 through 30. We're also going to see in chapter 30 the statement that I think is one of the most important in the book, which says something real similar. I set before you this day life and death, blessing and cursing. So there's another reference to the blessing and the curse. And what is kind of unique about the statement that begins this portion, the portion literally, behold, re'eh, is the next verse here, where it says, the blessing, and I'm going to render this the way it should be in English. In Hebrew, remember that the word if is im. So you would think it says, the blessing if you shall hearken, but it doesn't. The word im is not used here. The word literally translates into the English as the blessing that you shall hearken. Or as Rashi points out in a little bit older rendering, but in the modern English it would be the blessing on condition that, or up front. And that's important, but let me read the whole verse. The blessing on condition that you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yahuwah your El, which I command you today, and the curse if, there's the word im, the curse if you do not or shall not hearken unto the commandments of Yahuwah your El, but instead turn aside out of the way which I command you this day and go after other Elohim, fake gods, which you have not known. And that word there in the Hebrew, lo, of course, is not, and yada, known in the real sense, the experiential sense, the first-hand sense. You haven't known these other gods because they're fakes. All right, back to this condition, that part. And what's interesting about this is that the way the sages and the linguists explain it is the blessing comes first. The blessing comes first. The curses come if you don't follow in agreement, in obedience to the things that bring the blessings. But the blessings, he's just going to give you up front. Now, the way that this is often explained is, and I like this explanation, if I was to go to a car mechanic and I say, hey, I got this problem with my transmission, how much to fix it? And he says, well, nowadays I'd say, used to be you'd use the example of $100. Nowadays it's, well, $1,000, okay? But the so I'll give you the $1,000 on condition that you fix the car. How about if I said, I'll give you the $1,000 if you fix the car? You see the difference? The difference is, if he fixes the car, then I give him the $1,000. But the other way of stating it, I'll give you the $1,000 on condition is, I trust the guy enough to give him the $1,000 up front. I hope he carries through and fixes the car. And the key, the reason why this is such a big deal, is because Yah is giving us the blessing first on condition that, up front, that you obey these commandments. Okay, let's continue. It says, and it shall come to pass, when Yahuwah shall bring you into the land that you go into possess, that you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal, or Har Ebal. So there's literally two mountains there, and one is going to be representing the blessing, the other the curse. Are they not beyond the Jordan, behind the way of the going down of the sun, in other words, on the west side, in the land of the Canaanites that dwell in Arabah, over against Gilgal, beside the terebinths of Moreh? For you are going to pass over the Jordan, meaning the Jordan River, and go in to possess the land which Yahuwah gives you, and you shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and you shall observe to do all kol of ha-huchim. Those are the do them because I tell you to, you don't make, even they don't make sense to you. Ha-huchim, the statutes and the ordinances, that's ha-mishpatim, which I set before you this day. Here again, folks, is another one of those sets of words. There are words in English that are mistranslations from Torah, right? My least favorite is the law of Moses. And yes, there is law in there, but that ain't it. It is the Torah of Moses, which is the teaching and the instruction and the statutes and the judgments and the commandments and the examples and the stories. The teachings and the instruction includes all of that. Here, he is specifically talking about things to do. Ha-hukim and ha-mishpatim, the statutes and the ordinances. So there is a difference. These are limited to the things that are explicitly commandments. Okay, chapter 12 says, these are the statutes and the ordinances, hey, we just talked about that, which you shall observe to do in the land which Yahuwah, the Elohim of your fathers, has given you to possess it all the days that you live upon the earth. So understand, the condition here, or the upfront understanding is, these are the statutes and the ordinances which you shall observe to do in the land. Now, there's always a question that comes up, and I'll leave this as an exercise for the listener for now. It's one of those things we talk about. Some parts are going to turn out to be obvious, others not so much so. But anyway, the question is, hey, we've been kicked out of the land for not doing these things. Are they still commandments? Some of them, obviously, you can't even do if you're not in the land, or if there are certain conditions that you don't have anymore, and we don't have a lot of them. You don't have the Kohanim, for example. So there's a lot of things we can't do. But the more important, I think, and the arguable situation is, well, how about if we recognize we screwed up big time, and we'd like to go back into the land, we'd like to be blessed again, we'd like to get back in the right kind of relationship with Him, can we start obeying the ones that we can now? Wouldn't that sound like a good idea? I'm going to suggest, even if they're not necessarily out of the land, statutes and commandments, they certainly would be good things to do. Like this one. This is always interesting, and it's one of those things that I have highlighted. I encourage you to do that in your Bibles, too. You shall surely, utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations that are you're fixing to dispossess, to kick out of here, serve their fake gods, their Elohim, on the high mountains, upon the hills, under every leafy green tree, and you shall do the following. Now, here's another one of those places where I note with interest the difference between the Hebrew words and the conjugations of the Hebrew words and English. Now, they can be rendered into English, but what's missing is the fact that these words are in what's called the peel conjugation in Hebrew. In other words, peel is kind of like the really emphatic form of a verb. So, if I was to say the word run in Hebrew, and the regular, standard, like, you know, hey, run over there and grab me this conjugation, as opposed to in the peel conjugation, run would be, run like your life depends on it. I mean, boogie, guy. All right? Or, here are the examples. You shall break down their altars. Smash them to smithereens in the peel. Dash in pieces their pillars. Burn, literally, reduce them to ashes with fire, their asherim. And you shall hew down the graven images of their gods, and you shall destroy, literally, their name out of that place. So in the peel, this is exterminate, blot out, do away with. It's an over-the-top explanation of you shall not do any of these things unto Yahuwah your El. But unto the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even unto his habitation shall you seek, and there you shall come. And thither or there you shall bring all of these things, your burnt offerings, the lifted up offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offering of your hand, the firstlings of your herd and of your flock. All of these things you bring to this place where he is going to put his name. There you shall eat before Yahuwah your El, and there, by the way, here is another one of these interesting words that's going to appear. There you shall rejoice. And here you go. The word in Hebrew, and this appears over and over again in the next fraction of a chapter here, the word is Sameach. Samach, Ashin, Mem, Chet is the Shoresh, the root word there. And yes, we're offline, right? So apologies for the technical problems. Got that fixed. I was explaining a little bit of grammar, and there's a word in here, and the word in verse 7 of chapter 12 is sameach, or at least that's one way to put the vowel pointers in there, but it's a sin mem chet. And you may know it as if people say Hag Sameach, which basically is have a joyful feast. But the word means to rejoice, and that word appears a number of times in here. And I'll read the verse in the English, and we'll note that it's going to show up. And I think the reason why I always find this so fascinating is because this is a commandment. You shall eat before Yahuwah, and you shall rejoice in all that you put your hand to, you and your households, wherein Yahuwah your El has blessed you. So this is it's an interesting thing to be commanded to rejoice. I like that. You shall not do after all that men do here this day, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. For you haven't yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which Yahuwah your El gives you. But when you do go over the Jordan and dwell in a land which Yahuwah your El is causing you to inherit, and he gives you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then it shall come to pass that the place which Yahuwah your El chooses to cause his name to dwell there. So this is the place where he's going to put his name. Ultimately, it's going to be Yerushalayim, and at least for a while, up until the destruction of the temple. Thither shall you bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, those things that are lifted up, the olah, the tithes, and the offering of your hand, all your choice vows, which you vow unto Yahuwah. And there you shall, here it is again, sameach, rejoice before Yahuwah your El, you, your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, the Levite that's within your gates, because remember, he has no portion or inheritance with you. So take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings every place that you see, but in the place which Yahuwah shall choose in one of your tribes. There you shall offer your burnt offerings. There you shall do all that I command you. Notwithstanding, you can kill and eat flesh within all your gates, after all the desire of your soul, according to the blessing of Yahuwah your El, which he's given you. And the clean and the unclean may eat thereof, as of the gazelle and as of the hart. So clean animals. You shall only not eat the blood. You pour that out upon the earth as if it was water. And you may not eat within your gates the tithe, the part of your corn which you offer to him, or basically to the Levites, of your corn, or your wine, or your oil, or your firstlings of your herd, or your flock, nor any of the vows which you vow, nor the freewill offerings, nor of your hand. But you shall eat them before Yahuwah in the place where he, Yahuwah your El, shall choose. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite that's within your gates. And you, here it is again, shall rejoice, smach, before Yahuwah your El and all that you put your hand to. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live upon the land. When Yahuwah your El enlarges your border, as he's promised you, and you shall say, I'd like to eat some flesh, because your soul desires to eat flesh, well, then you can do so. You can eat it after all the desire of your soul. If the place which Yahuwah your El chooses to put his name is too far from you, then you shall kill of your herd and of your flock which Yahuwah has given you, as I have commanded you, and there you shall eat within your gates after all the desire of your soul, your nefesh, literally, nefesh sheka, y'all's souls. Now, one other interesting thing, there's a Rashiism in this verse. I'll mention it, and I'll say, he makes an interesting point. I don't know that I find it compelling, just interesting. And it says this, it's that verse that says, if the place which Yahuwah your El chooses to put his name is too far, you can kill from your herd and your flock, which he's given you, as I have commanded you. As I have commanded you. Now, what Rashi suggests is that, see, he hasn't told you how. In other words, how to do the so-called kosher kill. And so maybe what this is, and the way Rashi explains it is, yeah, this is a reference to the oral Torah, meaning, see, not everything's written down. And how do we know this? Because he says, as I have commanded you, and he doesn't command you how to do this, the so-called kosher kill in the Torah. So it must be the oral tradition. Well, okay, that's an interesting argument. Again, as I have commanded you, are we sure that that's what he's referring to? In any case, continuing, howbeit as the gazelle and the hart is eaten, that you shall eat thereof, the unclean and the clean, in other words, the people, they alike can eat it. Only just be steadfast, do not, here it is again, don't eat the blood, for the blood is the life. You shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out upon the earth as water. You shall not eat it. How many times does he have to say it? Answer over and over again, and people still don't seem to get this one. That it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. All right, only the set-apart things, the kadosh things which you have, and your vows, you shall take, and you go to the place which Yahuwah shall choose. And there you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, upon the altar of Yahuwah your El. And the blood of the sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of Yahuwah your El. You shall eat the flesh. Observe and hear all of these commands. Now remember, shamar, there's the root word there, like Shema Israel, same root word. And hear all these words which I command you, so that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever, when you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahuwah your El. When Yahuwah your El cuts off these nations from before you, the ones you're going in to dispossess, and you dispossess them, and you dwell in the land, take heed. Now, this is another one of these interesting commandments. Deuteronomy 12 is one of the chapters that I point out. If you're looking to show people things that he says over and over again, remember, keep, do, and how much paganism is not to be embraced. In other words, it's a place to look and see how he feels about things like Christmas and Ishtar Sun God Day and bunnies and eggs and all those pagan crap that people throw in his face. Read this verse. This is, by the way, close to the end of chapter 20, or 12, rather. And we're going to see that from here on out, we're going to get quite a few very, very strict, clear, undeniable condemnations of idolatry. Take heed to yourself. This is when you go into the land. That you are not ensnared to follow after these fake gods, after they are destroyed from before you. And don't even inquire after these gods and say, hey, how did those folks in the land, how did those nations used to serve their gods? Even so, hey, I can go do likewise. That's a great custom. The Ishtar eggs and the bunnies and the trees and the Yule logs and the Halloween jack-o'-lanterns, all kinds of wonderful pagan crap. I'll do likewise. Don't do that, he says. You shall not do so unto Yahuwah your El. Now listen to this part. Because every abomination to Yahuwah, everything which is literally to'iba, the strongest word in the language, he hates it. And that's what it says, which he hates. They've done those things for their gods. For even their sons and their daughters, they burn in the fire to their gods. I pause and I ask, does this sound familiar? You noticed, is there one sacrament in America today that the far left especially just gets absolutely stark, raving, loony, mad about? Oh yeah, it's the sacrament of child sacrifice, right? Oh, well, we don't sacrifice them to Molech. They're too valuable. Little arms and the legs and the organs, they're great to sell. I can't read this, folks, without saying all these things which he hates, they do to their gods. Matter of fact, they make you subsidize it. Matter of fact, they rub it down people's throats. They demand it. They teach it in the schools. All the things which he hates, they have done to their gods. Even their sons and the daughters, they sacrifice them. What do you say other than, wow, here we are. Okay, from there, chapter 13 is another one of these that I think will really resonate. It's another chapter that if you're dealing with people that do not understand why it is that Yeshua, in his very first public address, said, I'm not changing anything here. Why it is that had he said those things, he could not have been the Messiah. Well, turn to Deuteronomy chapter 13, have them read this, and ask them, doesn't this now help make sense of the real big difference between Jesus, another Jesus whom we've not preached, in other words, who supposedly did away with the law, and the real one, who said he wasn't changing the tiniest bit of it as long as heaven and earth still exist? Deuteronomy chapter 13. All of this word, he says, which I command you, you shall observe to do it. Well, we've heard this before. Yeah, Deuteronomy 12. First couple of verses there, he says the very same thing. Here he says it again. Must be important. You shall not add to it, nor shall you subtract from it. And after that, we get the following. Now, this whole rest of the portion here is about people that are fakes. You know, when Yeshua in Matthew 24 said, there's going to be lots of folks coming in my name, saying, here a Christ, there a Christ, everywhere a Christ, Christ. Look over here, look over there. There he is. How can we tell if they're fakes, if they're real? How will we be able to identify the one that did come and the one that maybe is coming back? Answer, read this carefully. If there arises in the midst of you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and look, hey, it does come to pass. Where have he spoke to you? Well, isn't that a proof? Well, listen, read the rest. Saying, you know what? Let's go after other gods, which you have not known. Let us serve them. Let's have bunnies and eggs. Let's do Ishtar, Easter. Let's do Mithras, December 21st, his birthday. Pick a fake god, folks. If somebody says, let's go after those, well, how should we respond? Well, even if the sign or wonder comes to pass, okay? You shall not hearken. Don't listen. Don't obey. Under the words of that prophet or that so-called dreamer of dreams, for your Yahuwah, your El, is testing you. He is putting you to the test, to the proof, to see whether or not you really do love Yahuwah, your El, with all your heart and with all your soul. Remember what Yeshua said is the most important commandment? Shema Yisrael, Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad, Vehavta et Yahuwah Eloheika, Vekol Lavavka, Vekol Nefeshka, Vekol Meodeka. Love him with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. After Yahuwah your El shall you walk. Him you shall fear, his commandments you shall keep, and unto his voice you shall hearken. Shamar. Shema, Israel, hear and obey. And him you shall serve, and unto him you shall cleave. That prophet, that dreamer of dreams, he shall be put to death because he has spoken perversion against Yahuwah your El, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage to draw you aside out of the way. Isn't it funny? During the first century, and up until they forgot what he was really teaching and changed times and seasons and did away with a lot of stuff, the followers of the real risen Mashiach were called followers of the way. What's being done here? To try to draw you out, aside, out of the way which Yahuwah El commanded you to walk. So it says, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Now, what's interesting about this is, right there is a pretty severe commandment. This prophet, this dreamer of dreams, trying to seduce you into idolatry, shall be put to death. Well, wait a second. Arguably, folks, that could apply to most of the world today, if you actually sit and think about it. Most of the so-called church, the whore church, a whole lot of... good news for them, I guess. We're not in the land anymore. We've been kicked out for cause. Too many people did this. We didn't listen. We didn't do what we're supposed to do. Our forefathers, great-great-great-great-great-great and so on, grandfathers and grandmothers didn't do that. So we're kicked out of the land. Here we are still in exile. So arguably we can't do this, but at least we can take heed to the lesson, right? These folks are still trying to draw us out of the way. Okay, how serious is he? Verse 7 makes it clear. You know what? Even if it's your brother, the son of your mother, or the son of your daughter, or your son or your daughter, or the wife of your bosom. In other words, any of your really close relatives that you love. Your friend who's kind of like your own soul. But they come to you and they entice you secretly, and they say, let's go serve other gods. Yeah, let's get Christmas and Easter and Ishtar and sun gods and Baal and the Lord and all. Yeah, let's get all those others, which you have not known, not you or your fathers. Or the gods of the peoples that are round about you, nigh unto you, for or far off from you, from one end of the earth unto the other end of the earth. In other words, all the pantheon of fake gods and goddesses and so forth, all of them. Even if one of those does this, then what? You shall not consent to him. You shall not hearken to him, don't hear and obey him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare, nor shall you conceal him. Now remember, this is even somebody you care about, you love, your wife, your son, your daughter. Don't spare them, don't consent, don't heal. He is really, really serious here. In other words, folks, this is important stuff. That's the key. You shall surely kill him, it says. Your hand shall be first upon him to put him to death. Afterwards, the hand of all of the people. And you shall stone him with stones so that he dies. Because he has sought to do what? He sought to do what the whore church has been doing for 17 centuries, folks. He has sought to draw you away from Yahuwah Yireh, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And I read this, and I think back to the Council of Nicaea, and I think back to all these wonderful things that the whore church did, saying, you know, somebody wants to keep Sabbath. Whoa! Kill them! Let's have bunnies and eggs and fake gods instead. Let's add all this good stuff, all of these little idols, little statuettes. If you look at the history of the Roman pagan whore church, it's all about saying, let's take all of these wonderful traditions of these various fake gods and mix them in. Oh yeah, we'll Christianize them. Folks, the whore church was kicked out of the land long before Yeshua. Yeshua was asked, are you going to bring the 10 lost tribes back? And the answer is not yet. They're still out there. But I will suggest that part of the real big reason that the whoring wife of the north, Israel, Ahola, is still in exile is this very reason. And they are still doing this. What was the commandment? Stone them with stones. Why? Because he has sought to draw you away from Yahuwah Yireh. Read the whore church documents. See so much of what's been done throughout the history and recognize it's all about drawing people away from the one true God, adding things in there, subtracting things from there, violating the commandments, saying that the law is done away with. Why? Well, because if the law hadn't been done away with, there'd be a whole lot of fathers and priests that would be hanging from stoned. How does he finish this segment? All Israel, Kol Israel. Israel. Now, at this point, the mixed multitude is all Israel. Later, it was separated, and all Israel, of the north at least, the land and the nation once called Israel, those 10 lost tribes, scattered, exiled. So all Israel shall hear and fear, and no longer shall no more in any such way do any such wickedness as this in the midst of you. Are we done yet? No. There's even more. If you hear the following, if you hear tell concerning one of your cities, I don't know, like maybe Rome. Well, Rome wasn't ever in the land, isn't that interesting? Which Yahuwah Yireh has given you to dwell there, saying, certain base fellows, literally certain Benai Belial, 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 okay, Bel, lords of El, base fellows, scumbags. Anyway, some of these folks, whatever you want to call them, they've gone out from the midst of you, and they've drawn away the inhabitants of their city, and they said, hey, let's go and serve some other gods, which you have not known. This is not just one. This is a number of folks doing this. Maybe they call themselves a special dispensation branch of the whore church. You inquire, you make search, you ask diligently. Behold, if it's true, and the thing is made certain that they really are doing such abomination in the midst of you, surely you shall smite the inhabitants of that city. Smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword. Now, that's the English translation. As you know, I always like to look at what the real Hebrew is when you see euphemisms like this. And what it literally says is lefi cherev, which is the mouth of the sword. And interestingly, in general, the mouth of the sword is used to strike people of the land, people of, by that I mean the real people of the land, once it was given to them. In other words, the sons of Israel. And in this case, that's what we're talking about, right? People who were of him. Smite the inhabitants of that city with the mouth of the sword, the edge of the sword, but destroying it utterly. All that's therein, the cattle too, with lefi cherev, the edge, the mouth of the sword. And you shall gather all the spoil of it in the midst of the broad place. In other words, go to the town square. Burn it with fire. All the spoil thereof, every whit unto Yahuwah Yireh, it shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. This is the reason why I am emphasizing this, and I just want folks to understand this. No, we don't do this. We're not in the land. Again, we're not in the land, maybe because we didn't do this. But it demonstrates, I think, graphically, and hopefully in a way that even people who are engaged in some of these activities might start to say, whoa, he knows my heart. He doesn't like it. Maybe there really is a reason why the whore church has been in exile for all this time. Part of it is understanding that the whore church is, in fact, the whore church. And how so much of what has been done is nothing but paganism and idolatry that's been brought in. So these cities will be made a heap, not built again. And by the way, don't take the little pagan places and build a Vatican City there. All right, enough of that. You shall do not cleave to any of the devoted things, things that were devoted to fake gods, into your hand, so that you may turn from the fierceness of his anger, show you mercy and have compassion on you, and multiply you as he has sworn to your fathers. When what? When you shall hearken to the voice of Yehoiarel to keep some of them. Not the one about Sabbath. We don't do that. We've got the Lord's Day now. Not the one about food. No, we don't do that. We'll come to that in a minute here. No, just the ones we like. Nope. All. To keep all of his commandments, which I command you this day, to do that which is right. What, in the eyes of the Pope, the vicar of Christ, who tells God what he got wrong? Nope. To do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah, your El. Okay? Yes. There's a lot of sarcasm in this, folks, because yes, we're talking about matters of what? Life and death, blessing and cursing. He says so. It's ironic. People say, oh, well, you know, he knows my heart. All this kind of crap. Well, there you go. This is crap. No, this is worse than crap. These are things that bring a death penalty. And he is about as clear as he can possibly be. It's not funny. It's no laughing matter. It is a literal matter of life and death. And it explains so much, I will contend, when we realize what a stinking, fetid mess this planet has become because of all the paganism. And even if you go back and you look at some of the places like this nation that was once blessed, just for a modicum of obedience, and see, yeah, there was still a whole lot of paganism. Compare that to now, no wonder there is judgment at hand. All right, let's move to chapter 14. You, it says, are the children of Yahuwah, your El. You're not to do a number of things. And listen to this list, and I'll just kind of go through it. I'll leave it as an exercise to the reader. Anything on here that resonates, we take to heart? Don't cut yourselves. Don't make any baldness between your eyes for the dead. Now, I'll simply note that for 15 years, 20 years or more that I've known of, it's still true, what is called cutting in the public cesspools has become an epidemic. I was stunned to find out years and years ago that there were kids, teenagers, younger, taking knives and cutting themselves, cutting their flesh. What is that? Well, I think the answer is it's right here. You are supposed to be a set apart, kadosh, holy people unto Yahuwah, your El, and Yahuwah has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples that are on the face of the earth. You shall not eat any abominable thing. Don't eat anything that's abominable. There are things that are food, in other words, that are meat, and other things, if we understand the scriptures, that really aren't. They're not food, they're not meat. And when you read some of the things that people translate or mistranslate, and for example, the New Testament, they'll deliberately change the meaning of words to say, well, pig flesh is meat. Well, it's not food. It might be some kind of flesh, but it's not edible flesh. Do you see the problem with the linguistics when we don't understand what he's really saying here? You are not to eat anything which is abominable. Well, how do I know? He's going to tell us. These are the beasts which you can eat. The ox, the sheep, and the goat. The hart, the gazelle, the roebuck, and the wild goat. In other words, deer and antelope. And those classes of things we're going to describe specifically in just a second how we can tell. But those things are food. They're edible. The pagarg, the antelope, the mountain sheep. Every beast that has a parted hoof. Nowadays, we might say a cloven hoof. In other words, the hoof is wholly cloven in two. And, key word here is and, it has to do both of these things. One alone is not sufficient, and the scripture is going to make it real, real clear, so there's just plain no argument about it. Has to have both. Has a cloven hoof, and it chews the cud among the beasts. In other words, the animals. Those things you can eat. Nevertheless, you shall not eat of any that only chew the cud, or of them that only have a cloven hoof. Okay, well, there are several animals in that latter category have a cloven hoof, but they don't chew their cud. Like the camel, the bunny rabbit, the hare, the rock badger. They chew the cud. They do not have a cloven hoof, a parted hoof. They have little feet or something like that. They are unclean. They are not food. The swine is the class, the porcine class, pigs and boars and stuff. That is the only class of animal, really, that is in this latter category. It has a cloven hoof, a parted hoof, but does not chew the cud. Now, what does that mean? We now know what that means is it doesn't have multiple stomachs. Doesn't have the rumen that these animals that are clean do. Okay, those things, he, the pig, is unclean unto you. His flesh you shall not eat, nor shall you even touch their carcasses. Now, I read this and I think, wow, isn't that interesting? Not even touch pig skin. Oops. Guess what that implies. Okay. These, no wonder they don't like this book and say it's done away with, right? And they want to eat the pigs and they want to eat all this crap, and they don't like it when he says, these aren't things that are good for you. It's worse than that. Let's finish the list here. Now, usually I go into some detail. There is plenty of detail in here, so I'll go through this fairly rapidly, especially since we had some internet connection issues earlier, or computer issues. But here are the things you can eat that swim in the waters. Similar and conjunction. If it has both fins and scales, it's food. You can eat it. Doesn't have fins and scales, both of them, you do not eat it. It is unclean to you. It is not food. How about birds? All the clean birds you can eat. Now, here are things you can't eat. Now, this is just going to be in the form of a list. And unlike fish and four-footed animals that walk on the land, we don't get a rule that helps us to understand which birds are clean and which ones aren't. I'll suggest there's kind of a rule in here. Now, understand, this is markology. This is my take. It is not scripture. It's just one of the things that yours truly has observed that seems to be the characteristic of the things in the list and not. But when in doubt, I'm going to suggest look at the list and read it. Here are things which you shall not eat. The great vulture, the bearded vulture, the osprey, the gleed, the falcon, the kite, all kinds of ravens. Let's pause there. Notice what those things have in common? And we'll go down the list here. The little owl, the great owl, the horned owl, the carrion vulture, the cormorant, stork, heron, hoopie, and bat. For the most part, these are either carrion birds or they are birds that literally are predator birds. They're meat eaters. They're things that kill other birds or other animals, rats and small animals, and eat them. There's at least one other animal on this list which I've always kind of raised my eyebrows at, but I understand they do eat anything. That's the ostrich, the nighthawk, the sea mew, the hawk after their kinds. All the winged swarming things are unclean to you. They shall not be eaten. Various kinds of moths and flying bugs and flies and gnats and mosquitoes. All the winged things you may eat, but you're not to eat anything that dies of itself. Okay, so of the winged things you may eat, the swarming things are unclean. All winged swarming things are unclean. Don't eat those. They're not food. You cannot eat, you should not eat, anything that dies by itself. I have referred to this as the roadkill prohibition, but of course there weren't those kind of roads, and we probably didn't have as many animals getting run over by cars at 70 miles an hour. But suppose there's just an animal, and for unknown reasons, it just keels over and croaks right there. Don't eat it. What killed it? You don't know. That doesn't so much matter as the prohibition is, if it dies by itself, it's not food. You can give it, this is interesting, to the stranger that's within your gates. He'll eat anything. Mikey likes it. Mikey will eat it. Don't sell it. You can. You can sell it to a foreigner. But you are a set apart people unto Yahuwah. You shall not seethe a kid in its mother's milk. Huh? Now, this one's interesting, too. This, by the way, is, at least so we're told, the place where the standard kosher prohibition in Rabbinic Judaism against mixing dairy products and meat products comes from. Don't see the kid in its mother's milk. Honestly, I've seen this. I've heard the explanation. I don't quite buy it. Your mileage may vary. If you want to believe that means don't eat a cheeseburger, okay, fine. Not going to argue with you. But the commandment simply says, do not see the kid in its mother's milk. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, which is brought forth in the field year by year. You shall eat before Yahuwah in the place which he shall choose, to put his name, the tithe of your corn, your wine, your oil, firstlings of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear Yahuwah always. And if it's too far for you, so that you're not able to carry it, because the place is far from you, which Yahuwah has put his name, where he shall bless you, well, then what you can do. I like this. This is another one of these indicators of things that have long since been forgotten, at least unless we go back and look at it in original language. You can turn it into kesef, it says. Ha kesef. What does that mean? You can literally convert the animal, you sell the animal, and you get in exchange something of universal value, like money. Okay, so the rendering here in the English is money, but the word kesef, what is it? Silver. Turn your animal, sell it for silver. Then you bind up that silver in your hand, and you go to the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose. And there, you can take that silver, and you can trade it for anything you want. For oxen, for sheep, for wine, or for strong drink. Now, the Baptists are wrong. You can actually trade this for some bourbon or whatever it is that they got. Or for whatever your soul asks of you. And you can eat it there, should eat it there, shall eat it there before you, who you are. You shall rejoice. There's that same root word again. Smeach. You and all your household. Oh, yeah, and the Levite that's within your gates, do not forget him nor forsake him. He doesn't have any portion or inheritance with you. Every 3 years, at the end of that same year, you shall bring forth a tithe of your increase, lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he hadn't got any of that inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow, those that are in your gates, within your gates, they can come and eat and be satisfied so that Yahuwah may bless all you in the work of all your hand, which you do. So some interesting comments in here and understanding. Chapter 15 says, at the end of every 7 years, you make a release. So this is the concept of the sabbatical year. This is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release that which he's lent unto his neighbor. He does not exact it of his neighbor or his brother, because Yahuwah's release has been proclaimed. The foreigner, though, you can exact it, but whatever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. Howbeit, there shall be no needy among you, for Yahuwah will surely bless you in the land which Yahuwah your El gives you for inheritance to possess you, if only you diligently hearken unto the voice of Yahuwah to observe to do all this commandment which I command you this day. Huh. Notice how so often he keeps making this same repetitious statement. There's blessing here. If only you'll just do the things that I'm commanding you to do this day. Oh, well, it's all done away with. Well, so is the blessing, I guess. Therein lies the rub, folks. For Yahuwah your El will bless you as he's promised you. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. If there are among you a needy man, one of your brethren, within any of your gates in the land which Yahuwah gives you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your needy brother. But you shall open your hand to him. Surely you shall lend him sufficient for his need, that which he wants. But be aware that you don't have a base thought in your heart saying, oh, you know what, it's coming up on the seventh year. Man, I'm going to be screwed here. He's not going to pay me back. The year of release is at hand. And then you get your eye to be evil against your needy brother. You don't give him anything. And he cries out to Yahuwah against you, and that is sin for you. Surely you shall give it to him. Your heart shall not be grieved when you give it to him, because for this thing Yahuwah your El will bless you in all your work and all that you put your hand to. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Now remember, Yeshua quotes this. Obviously he wrote it, so it makes sense he would quote it. They'll be poor always. Therefore I command you, saying, surely you open your hand unto the poor and unto your needy brother in your land. Now, if your brother, an Ivri, a Hebrew man, or a Hebrew woman, is sold unto you, a bondservant, notice there's no prohibition against that. There is, in fact, a biblical provision for it. And here we're going to see part of it. This is one of those things, again, where when we get to this idea of slavery, and I hear people say, oh, slavery, bad, completely unacceptable. And yet, what they don't recognize is they are slaves to the tax man. They are slaves to a Pharaoh, which demands far more than Pharaoh in Egypt ever did. In other words, the IRS wants half. Big Brother wants more than half. And furthermore, if you leave the nation and go elsewhere, they still come after you. Isn't it funny? People will say how awful this God of the Bible is for specifying this kind of bond service, and they don't realize how much slavery they are in. Why? Because of dishonest weights and measures. Because of rebellion to the Creator of the universe. Him alone you shall serve. Well, it turns out the other masters are a lot nastier. So what's interesting is, here is the provision that is going to be made for the bondservant. Compare this to what happens today. Okay, if your brother, he's a Hebrew man or a woman, is sold unto you, well, they serve for 6 years. Not like Big Brother, where you never, ever, ever get away from the tax man, death and taxes, and not necessarily in that order. The seventh year, you let him go from you. So when you let him go, he goes free from you. Do not let him go out empty-handed. What? Yeah. Furnish him liberally. Give him some stuff from your flock, from your threshing floor, out of your wine press. Of that wherewith Yahuwah has blessed you, you shall give unto him. And remember, see, you were a bondman in the land of Egypt. What happened when the people of the land left Egypt? Yeah, they were blessed. They literally looted the land. They didn't do it involuntarily. People of Egypt gave them, the former slaves, now free, they gave them stuff. Interesting. Yahuwah redeemed you. Therefore, I command this thing today. So, if it is that he says unto you, I won't go out, because he loves you and your house, because he's fared well there, right? You've treated him nicely. Well, then you take an awl. Now, this is coming from Exodus 21. And it's a repetition. Like so many of the things here, it's going to be another indicator of what we see. And I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask, do we have audio again? Give me some ones? Okay, good, good. Sorry about that. I know we were off for another minute or two. Okay, so this is the place where we're talking about the bondservant and the time of release in the seventh year. And if he says at that point, and we saw this again in Exodus 21, I'm not going to go out from you because he loves you and your house. He's had a good time. He's fared well with you. Well, then you take an awl. You thrust it through his ear and into the doorpost. And then he shall be your bondman forever. You can do the same thing for your bondwoman. And this shall not seem hard for you when you let this guy or woman go free. For double of the hire of the hireling, he served you for 6 years. And Yahuwah will bless you in all that you do. Now, one of the things that I've always liked about kind of the Hebraic understanding here is the idea of this kind of bond service. Why did this person end up in this trouble to begin with? They fell into debt, or they did something wrong, or they couldn't handle life on their own. So they go in and they go into this position of servitude for a period of time. And at the end of this period of time, hopefully they've learned. Now they're ready to be, quote-unquote, a productive member of society. You're going to furnish them? This is a good thing. Shouldn't be hard to you. When you let him go, he's been worth it to you, right? So, if you furnish him liberally, Elohim will bless you in all that you do. The firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock, you set apart, sanctify unto Yahuwah. You shall not work with the firstling of your ox, nor the firstling of your flock, or shear them. You shall eat it before Yahuwah, year by year, in the place which Yahuwah commands you, you and your household. Now, if there's any blemish therein, or lameness, or blindness, any ill blemish whatsoever, you do not sacrifice that one unto Yahuwah. You shall eat it within your gates. The clean and the unclean may eat it alike, the persons, as the gazelle and the hart. Only, know this, right? Do not eat the blood. You pour it out on the ground as if it was water. And I'm going to pause again just a second. We got lots of pauses tonight. See if it will reconnect. Internet is the problem. There's the thunderstorm here, and that's the reason why it's been so nasty as far as the internet connection is concerned. Chapter 16. This is the last chapter in the Parsha. It says, observe the month of Abib, and keep the Pesach of Yahuwah unto Yahuwah. For in the month of Abib is the month that Yahuwah brought you out of Egypt by night. And you shall sacrifice the Passover offering unto Yahuwah your El, of the flock and of the herd, in the place which Yahuwah your El shall cause his name to dwell there. So again, it's in the place where he puts it to be. And you are not to eat any unleavened bread. During this week, 7 days, you eat unleavened bread, even the bread of affliction, because remember, in haste you came out of the land of Mitzrayim or Egypt. All of this so you might remember the day when you came forth out of Egypt all the days of your life. And there shall be no leaven seen with you in all your borders for 7 days. Nor shall any of the flesh which you sacrifice the first day at evening remain all night until the morning. You may not sacrifice the Passover offering within any of your gates which Yahuwah your El gives you, but you do this at the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose to cause his name to dwell. There you shall sacrifice the Pesach offering at evening, at the going down of the sun, and at the season which you came forth out of Egypt. So this is a commandment, and interestingly enough, folks, the place where he's put his name, well, there is no place right now, as far as I'm aware anyway, and as far as history demonstrates, where we could do this anyway. So it's nice to know about, but physically you cannot accomplish it. Now, is the place, people say, well, he dwells in my heart, great. Then can you sacrifice the Pesach lamb in your heart? Maybe. Can you, you know, you get, people want to spiritualize a whole lot of stuff. I guess what I'm going to suggest is he lays this out for us so that we have an understanding of the things that are commandments to do. And when it gets to the point where we say, okay, I simply can't do that, I tend to suggest, this is the Markology part, the best we can do is to read it and to understand it. We can, of course, offer the bulls of our lips, the sacrifices of our lips. We can praise and we can pray and we can remember and we can do those things. Okay. In any case, if there this place existed still, you could roast and eat it in the place which Yahuwah your El chooses, and turn in the morning and go to your tents. 6 days you eat unleavened bread. Now here we are, not in the land, in exile. Can't do some of these things. On the other hand, can we eat unleavened bread for 6 days? And on the seventh day, a solemn assembly unto Yahuwah, and do no work? I will suggest these things we can do. From there, 7 weeks you shall number unto yourself. From the time the sickle is first put to the standing corn, you start to count, number 7 weeks. You keep the feast of weeks, Shavuot. Some call it Pentecost, but I like Shavuot understandings better. The feast of, because it's the Hebrew word as opposed to the paganized Greek one, you shall keep the feast of Yahuwah your El, after the measure of the freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give according as Yahuwah has blessed you. Oh, and here's this word again. And you shall rejoice. Root word, Samach, Simcha. Rejoice before Yahuwah your El, you and your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite that's within your gates, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow. That list appears again. All those that are in the midst of you. Where? In the place which Yahuwah your El shall cause his name to dwell there. Remember, you were a bondman in Egypt. You shall observe to do these statutes. You shall keep the feast of tabernacles. Tabernacles. Oh, Sukkot. That's literally the word there, and plural, a plural of booths or tents, tabernacles. Keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This would be the fall feast now we're talking about. The one that's coming up next, one of the ones coming up in the next sequence of fall feasts. Keep the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days. After you've gathered in from your threshing floor and your wine press, this is the time of the harvest, the end gathering. You shall there it is again. You shall rejoice in your feast, you. So here's Chag Sameach, literally. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. That list again. All that are within your gates. 7 days you keep that feast unto Yahuwah your El in the place which Yahuwah shall choose. Because Yahuwah your El shall bless you in all your increase and in all the work of your hands, and you shall be altogether, ready, joyful. Sameach. Simcha. Chag Sameach, Simcha, joyful. Remember, there are lots of ways that this word, the root word, is used, but it always have this. It always has this understanding of joyfulness, rejoicing. And there's something about that that I think is particularly nice when we understand what it is that he has for us. These, by the way, that are have just been described are what are called the Feasts of Ascension. These three times, when there was a place for all of the males to go, where they would go there. And here is the summary. This is the last couple of verses in the Parsha Re'eh. Three times a year shall all your males appear before Yahuwah, your El, in the place which he shall choose. On those three times, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that week in the spring, on the Feast of Weeks, this time of Shavuot, the seven times 7 weeks, the 50th day, and so forth, and on the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot. And by the way, he says, do not appear before Yahuwah empty-handed. Going to have a big barbecue, a feast, take something with you. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yehuyarel, which he has given you. Give joyfully. Go joyfully. Celebrate. Remember. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahuwah, which he has given you. Remember? Remember how this thing started? Blessings that. The blessing comes in advance. And here comes the joy for the blessing that came in advance when we remember, oh yeah, all of this blessing, all of this increase, this comes from him. Go celebrate. Be joyful. Don't go empty-handed. And give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahuwah, which he has already, up front, given you. And may it be so. So again, important understandings here. Some of these things we cannot do. We are in exile. That part is understood. But I think that what we need to understand is how important it is that all of these things are listed here. They're for our blessing, and they're for our understanding. And even if we can't do them because we've been kicked out of the land, yeah, there are elements of this that we can memorialize. Paul calls them things like shadow pictures. And I'll suggest that they're not only pictures of things past, like, for example, what happened during that week that Yeshua literally perfected, demonstrated, fulfilled perfectly all of the elements of the spring feasts. Huh. It always has made sense to me, you know, there's a certain symmetry, a certain harmony, a certain pattern that we can see in Scripture. If I was to be asked, gee, Mark, when do you think the return of Yeshua will be? Well, we're told no man knows the hour of the day. Isn't it interesting? The countdown to the fall feast begins on the only hag, the only special moed, appointed time, which happens at the new moon. What's the characteristic of the new moon? Well, you don't know it until you've seen it. Now, I know people say, well, we can calculate it, but nope. As far as officially, two witnesses. So, to my mind, and by the way, colloquially, during the time of Yeshua, that time of Yom Teruah, the blowing of the shofar. Why did they blow the shofar? Because two witnesses had seen it. There it is! There's the new moon. Start the countdown for the fall feasts. No man knows the hour of the day. It was literally called the Moed, that no man knew the hour of the day. So when I see a reference to Yeshua and saying that no man knows the hour of the day, I have this suspicion. You know, you can imagine the disciples saying, oh, yeah, he's talking about Sukkot. We don't know what year it is. We don't know precisely when it's coming, but we know the season, right? We know we're getting to the time in the season when we're looking for that sighting of the new moon. Might be a day or two off, but we can pretty well tell. He tells us, don't be caught unawares. Again, so all of these things fit. Where am I headed with this? I'm suggesting that if those who believe that he's coming back are looking for a time frame, a time to be paying attention, to be not caught unawares, maybe we should be celebrating and rejoicing in his feasts, especially the one that looks like a wedding feast and that we're supposed to be prepared for as if it was. Have the spiritual oil in your lamps and so forth. So I can't help but think, yeah, all the pieces fit together, and it looks like we need to understand these feasts, even if we can't do them for reasons, because we're, we've been kicked out. We can memorialize, we can be prepared, and we can be watchful.